a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Hey, Rob, are you awake yet? Hey,
it's
Rob.
It's a new, brand new day, buddy. Here we go. It's New Year's Eve day.
It is. And you finally woke up so we can do the podcast. You decided Sleeping Beauty was more important than doing the podcast for all of the fans.
You know that snow is really white.
You know, we actually got about an inch of snow down here, too. Just a nice covering. The tops of the grass is poking out. But, you know, we got a little snow last night, too. You're not the only one.
We got about 6 inches of snow here.
What
fresh
is
white.
What's a better way to finish out the decade than a nice, you know, covering of snow?
Right. Well, you could be living in southern Arizona.
Hey, that's a dry heat. That's a dry heat. Don't worry about that.
It's a wonderful dry heat.
Especially this time of year.
It's really warm.
you can pick on me all you want, Mr. Rob. I get to be in Punta Cana in about 24 days. Actually, I'll be in Punta Cana in 18 days.
Yeah. Well, I hope you don't get Punta Cana-sized.
I don't know what that means.
They do crazy things down there. People don't return
from
there. Oh,
stop it, you crazy old coot. So I guess we can jump right in, Rob. Are you excited for our new store that's being launched? Ooh, I guess for anybody who's not in Wisconsin, this may or may not have gotten to them as information. We have a new store.
Yeah, we're selling all kinds of Cue It Up podcast new stuff. We're selling coffee mugs and hats and hoodies.
Hoodies it is. Long sleeve shirts, zip-up hoodies. We're going to have patches and stickers and candies and all kinds. Oh, we're not going to have candies. But the rest of it we'll have. And that's kind of fun.
You know who wears shirts with stickers and patches and stuff?
Pros, after I pay them.
I don't think pool players wear them anymore. Maybe they put them on their cue case or something. Or a jacket they'll put a patch on. But billiard players. Three-cushion billiard players.
Yeah, that they do. Still to snooker players.
They have vests. Snooker players always wear vests in the higher end tournaments, and they always have, you know, the better ones, the ones around the world who have been everywhere and done it all. They always have a lot of patches on their vests.
Yeah, it's more of a gentleman's game, billiards and snooker, than I think pool is. Although there are some pool tournaments
you wear more patches.
Well, I think. I think a lot of players put on patches still. The pro players actually, John Mora just had patches on his shirt, which is the match we'll talk about today. He had patches on his shirt.
He did? What did they say?
Mucci.
Oh, of course, yeah. No, they well,
yeah,
they
he's a sponsored player. Yeah.
From those places, they have. I would maybe you know what? You pay me something, and I'll give you a shirt with a patch that says Rob on it. To put on your shirt.
Okay.
You could have a Cue It Up shirt with a patch that says Rob.
Am I supposed to order those for you and you can pay me for
no,
them?
I'll send you the patch. You just put it on your shirt.
Oh, well, how in the world are you going to get a patch made up that says Rob on it? You wouldn't know place to go to get a patch made up.
Oh, yeah. We got places right here in Marshfield, Wisconsin. You can go get a patch made. Oh, yeah, for sure. I'd do it myself. I'd make my own patch. Patch, how about that? That'd be special, wouldn't it? You'd wear that, wouldn't you, Nate?
It sure would be something.
Sure would be something.
I am confused as to like half of the tangents that we find a way to go down, and this is going to fit right into that. I just don't understand how they happen.
You bring it up. I don't. I'm the color commentator, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I get to do. I get to take your straight-laced act and liven it up a little bit.
Well, you're such a sweetie. Well, I guess I can pull us back then from that tangent. And so if any of the super fans out there want more Cue It Up gear in their life, that store will become live very, very soon, probably by the end of this week. And Maybe sooner, but certainly by the next time you hear us on the podcast, for the actual podcast, because you should be hearing me in a couple days, but the next time you hear us on the podcast, the store will be live, and I will have a link to it and how to find it. So everybody gets super excited about it.
That sells stuff.
Yeah. Speaking of international podcasts, you kind of got let off the hook. There was nobody from Ireland that reached out to the podcast. Yet.
I got away with a $20 deal there. Huh?
Well, yet we've had two people from Ireland actually listen to that podcast. I checked. So they are just they just don't want a t-shirt. Or they're shy or something.
They don't know what they're missing. Those t-shirts are great.
The best.
I mean, they're really, that's the most comfortable t-shirt I've ever had.
It is. It actually is.
Yeah, they're really, really nice. They wrap themselves around you. It's like you're tucked into a pool bed at night, you know, only it's all day long.
Yeah, kind of something like that.
You can wear it to bed. There's no reason you can't wear your Cue It Up podcast t-shirt to bed.
No, I actually usually do some. Yeah, they're pretty comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's big takeaway number one topic. The second one, I did a short little 15-minute podcast last night on my own talking about the matchup coming up, and I discussed that basically I'm going to be doing a live Facebook interview with Alex and Sky. So that'll have all the details in there, and if you haven't heard that one yet, head over and listen to that one as well after this. And
Alex the Lion?
Alex the Lion, Peggy Lion, and Sky the Kentucky Bluegrass Badass Terminator. Woodward, I think.
He doesn't have a nickname, does he, Sky?
The Bluegrass Badass. Well, I mean, his nickname is the Bluegrass Badass.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. So he does have a nickname, Bluegrass Badass.
Yeah.
From Kentucky?
He is from Kentucky.
Kentucky Bluegrass.
Don't you remember the trivia from last week?
Does he ever vote a horse races? In Kentucky? Has he ever been to the Kentucky Derby?
Well, how's this, Rob? Why don't you log in on Thursday, come to the live viewing, and you can ask that question, and maybe I'll ask it to him.
Is that going to be just as hard as it is for me to listen to the podcast?
No, I hope not, because it's going to be on the Cue It Up page, which you have full access to.
Okay. Okay, maybe I'll do that.
All you have to do is log into Facebook and go to the Cue It Up page. And for everybody else out there, for the listeners, come to the Cue It Up page Thursday afternoon.
Am I limited to what kind of questions I can ask?
No, but you know, Alicia's going to be monitoring that. So if it's not good, if the questions aren't good, she's going
to
ignore them.
My questions are going to have to be filtered through Alicia.
They are. Alicia is going to be in charge of the questions.
I love it. Oh, boy.
So, yeah. No hitting on my fiance. Any of the questions,
well,
they got to be all pool related.
Whatever. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I'm watching you, Rob. I mean, I'm not actually, but she is. So.
Well.
So, I guess those are the two kind of big announcements. I don't really have anything else. Is there anything that you would like to give out, Rob?
No. We're going to go ahead. You do the shout out today.
Well, we both got to give a shout out. Don't you want to give a shout out at all?
Okay. Well, I told you I was gonna push this prolotherapy treatment stuff again. I never did get that call from that fella up in Canada who was interested in it. Probably, you never know with the, you know, how many practitioners there are of this in Canada, where, you know, all your medicine is kind of paid for. They might not be up there because not too many people know about this type of treatment, which is crazy. You know, it's been around since the 70s.
Yeah. So, you know, I actually, now that you say that, I may have dropped the ball and forgot to give him your number.
Oh,
I'm going to have to look into that. I'm going to have to look into that.
Why don't you look into that?
About that.
Because I'll give him the information. And I did a little more research on this type of therapy to find out what the chemistry on it was, what's going on in your body that fixes your body with these sugar shots, okay? Sugar shots. That's a physical therapist tell me, oh, yeah, I was telling her about this prolotherapy. She goes, oh, sure, the sugar shots. So, and basically that's what they are. You get a shot of sugar. Dextrose, liquid, and in a saline solution, and they inject it in you. A sugar shot. Now, how does that help you? What does that do? It does two things. The sugar increases the circulation in the area where the needle went in. Like acupuncture, you're going in there with a needle, right? Well, this is a solution, and that stimulate that sugar feeds all the cells that need to start rebuilding tissue, and they're called fibroblasts. And if you ever want to look up what a fibroblast is, what it can do, it's like the most important cell in the world. And this therapy works by stimulating the production of fibroblasts in your body, which heal. They can heal muscle, can heal tendon, can heal any connective tissue, can heal ligaments, and can heal bone.
Oh, wait a second. Osteoblasts do that.
Osteoblasts. But guess what? Look up where they come from. They come from fibroblasts.
Oh, really?
Fibroblasts have the ability to turn into and produce other types of cells that fix things. Osteoblasts are one of the things. Yeah. Amelioblasts are another thing. What do they do? I bet you don't know that. What does an amelioblast do?
Well, I'm guessing it has something... Amelio,
yeah.
I'm guessing it has something to do with your nerves, because...
No. In a very far-out way.
Aminos would be your proteins, and your proteins are basically your nerves, so I'm assuming it's that, but apparently it's not.
No, they make enamel for your teeth.
Oh, well, I wasn't close.
So you know you wouldn't, but they make more than that. They make the connective tissue in the tooth, which would be the dentin, and the periodontal ligament and the nerve of the tooth. So you are correct about the nerve. They don't make the enamel. I take that back. The enamel is inert. I misspoke there. But anyhow, enough of that. But that's my shout-out is for this treatment, and I'm going to appeal to all the pool players out there. In fact, anybody in sports. Pool might be a second sport for you. Your first sport might be baseball or football or hockey or water polo or something. But any sport out there, you're going to have injuries, and your body's going to get in, your body's going to get hurt. Or you're going to age. Everybody's going to age until we expire. So that process of aging, what that does is it tears your body down, aging it. And so you want to try to do something that's going to stimulate the growth of new tissue. And proliferation therapy does that. And I would recommend this treatment as a first choice. For anybody out there that's got any sports-related injury that's been nagging and going on for a while and just doesn't want to heal, physical therapy isn't working, medicine isn't working, it just keeps going, and year after year you're putting up with this nagging pain and soreness or whatever, wherever it is. And I don't care where it is in your body. I don't care. Even migraine headaches. If you're getting migraine headaches, proliferation therapy can work for that. And this treatment is, I'm telling you, it's better than 80%, 85% on everything across the board. And some things it's 100%. So you just get fixed. It's never coming back. My problem, which was my upper neck and upper back, so cervical and thoracic problems, degeneration of my discs, so forth and so on, numbness in my arm going down my hand, tingling in my fingers, and pain, a lot of pain associated with that. I've been out of pain now for like, I don't know how long, Nate. It's been 2.5, 3 months maybe. 2.5 for sure.
Which makes me happy because I don't have to put up with grumpy Rob.
No, I'm not grumpy anymore. I'm really, well, my wife gets me grumpy once in a while. I shouldn't blame her. It's You shouldn't let other people control you, but somehow your spouse can do that. Whether they want to or not, they end up controlling you. That's why you get become like your spouse after so many years of marriage. I just wish she played pool.
Well, there you go. But then you'd always be grumpy because you'd always have to be around her.
She came to one pool tournament with me in my life. And I embarrassed her so bad by how bad I played that she never wanted to go to another one with me.
Well, that's a struggle.
It was. It was terrible. Yeah. It was the worst tournament I've ever been at, ever performed. Worst performance. I played two matches of 8-ball race to 5 on a bar table, and I never ran 3 balls in a row, both matches.
Ouch. Well, I will give my shout-out to Charles Lakey this week, and I only say that because I went on a binge-watching. For anybody who doesn't know Charles Lakey, he is called The Inventor on Facebook. And he's kind of known for his trick shots and his just insane stroke. But if you've never heard of him, head over to Facebook and search Charles Lakey or Charles the Inventor Lakey.
I vote for that.
And watch some of his videos, because some of the shots he does is just stupid. Like, I don't even understand how you can come up with some of the ideas for his shots. And then the execution for them is even more just insane.
Yeah, his drills?
Oh, they're just so tough.
His drills are that one where he puts all the balls on the rail, all the way up the long rail, on either side of the side pocket, and makes every one in order from the one closest to the corner pocket all the way up to the end of the table. Now, I don't know how many tries it took him to do all those, but he cuts every one down the rail, right in.
Yeah, I mean, he's good.
He's good.
He's,
I mean,
he's a shot maker
king.
Yeah, it's.
Why doesn't he play professional pool?
I don't know. He's,
I mean, if you're that good, why wouldn't you?
He's from Sweden, so I don't know what. I mean, it's a little bit tougher over there. But
okay.
I mean, we're talking it up, and the shots that he does are actually just absolutely insane. Head over there, like, stop the podcast right now. Rob and I suck. We're terrible. This guy's the real deal. Go check out his stuff, because you can come back to us. We're not important.
No, we're hacks compared to this guy.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is, the stuff that he does is just crazy, so.
It's like Venom. It's like the Venom, Florian.
Yes,
I mean, he's that much better than your average little coconut, you know?
Yes, it is those two that are just far and away the best, you know, some of the biggest strokes in the entire world and just the coolest, most creative shots. It's really, really cool, so.
And those tables, they don't look like they're that fast. The cloth doesn't on them?
No, it's just their stroke. Their stroke is just so much vastly superior to anybody else's.
Well, that's what happens. They don't have to play on a table with fast cloth. Their strokes are unbelievable.
Yes, yeah. So that's my shout-out, and I guess with that we can jump right into what happened.
Shout that out. I'm on board with you. That was a good shout-out.
Yes. So let's jump into what happened.
What did happen this week?
What happened this week was Alex Olinger and John Mora played their big race to 100. And as far as just run out pool, it was a little disappointing. There was almost no table runs, actually. I shouldn't say no table runs. There was no strings. The highest that I saw was 4. Yeah. And that was actually done by Alex on day one. John may have broke that on day three. I didn't get to watch much of day three, at least very intently. I watched it all, but I didn't watch it super, super closely because I had wedding planning to do. And I tried to go back and watch it later on, and it was already taken down. So I'm going to have to try to get back and watch that at some point in time. But I know that the breaks were just not working for either player. There was a lot of dry breaks, a decent amount of scratching, kind of fluke scratches. Like they weren't Alex especially, he was not sticking the cue ball at all. John Mora was sticking the cue ball pretty well for the most part, and Alex was just kind of letting the ball float around, and it'd get kicked in some really weird ways, or it'd go three rails without touching a single ball and going to the side pocket. Or
the difference between a bar table and a big table.
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest difference. The balls don't have room to go. You got balls tied up all over the place on a bar table. Bar table players are used to that. Big table players aren't having balls tied up.
Yeah,
they play open racks all the time.
It's very rare that you have to it's very rare on a bar box that you break them so wide open that you don't have to move a single ball.
Right.
Or play, you know, a very difficult positioning on a ball that only goes into one pocket or something like that.
Yeah, or play between balls that are, you know, all over the place and close together.
Yeah, for the most part, you're usually moving balls.
A bar box. I mean, I've had tournaments, Nate, where I'll scratch every rack. Race to five, I'll break four times and scratch four times.
And once it gets into your head that you're scratching a lot, there's nothing that you can do to stop from it. You'll stick the cue ball right in the center of the table and it'll get kicked twice into the corner, or
yeah,
you know, you'll focus so much on sticking the cue ball that you finally do, and then the last ball on the table comes and kicks it into the side, or
yeah, oh, kicks just it like, in the side.
Once it gets into your head that you can't stop scratching on the break, you got no chance. Just no chance. Drawing it straight back into the corner, getting lazy and just like letting it drift into the side pocket. Yeah. Oh, that's one of the most frustrating parts about this game for me is the break shots when you're in one of those ruts and you just can't stop from scratching.
Yeah, we figured when we talked about this match, and you won, by the way, again.
Whoop whoop!
You didn't want to. You wanted to take Alex, and I should have let you because then I would have won.
Well, but I would have ended up switch. I did end up switching my mind on this after I thought about it a little bit more as I talked on the podcast. I thought I had a little bit of bets, a couple bets on the side. On Mora as well. I was pretty bought into Mora winning after I took a little time thinking about it.
And well, I
was aided by the
table, flu. You know, and no take what you make, that there'd be over a 10-pack.
I thought that there'd be a 7 or an 8. I really did.
Yeah, I thought there'd be
in
more.
In several fours. I think if I remember right, I said that there would be several fours ran. And there would probably be a 7 or an 8 at some point in time. And there
was, if you're not breaking good, that's it, though.
There was one or two fours and nothing above it. So,
yeah.
And I think I know why. Both of the players were really hammering the breaks. And when you have a diamond that plays a little tough like that, ramping up your break speed, it doesn't help you any. I mean, you're just hitting the balls too hard to have them fall in on those shelves.
On valleys, you can hit it
as hard as you want because those pockets accept anything. The diamonds, they will not accept anything coming in at a high speed when it's hitting to the nipples.
Right. Side pocket nipples, they aren't going to fall in.
And that was actually a little – I was almost a little disappointed by that. Was I did not see either of the players really take off a lot of speed and stick with that consistently. It just seemed like when they were struggling with their breaks, they would move the cue ball around, but they would keep their speed the same. They were really hammering the breaks.
You know who I think adjusts – as well as anybody in the game that I've ever seen to that situation. When you got on a table, you're playing under the conditions where the balls aren't going on the break, and you've got to change that. You got to change your break speed or angle or whatever. Corey Duell does that very well. One professional player that I've seen that he adjusts immediately to those situations and starts pocketing balls. Even soft breaking starts pocketing balls. He'll play the corner ball in the corner back up on the other end. You know, if nothing else is working, he'll just play that shot.
Yes,
and for people like blocks,
yeah, and for people who don't know what you're referring to, he actually will. If you're playing eight ball, the farthest wing ball, the one that's in the back left corner, he'll actually take the cue ball and hit basically that ball, cut it into the stack, and then bank it, basically playing a carom bank shot. And he'll make that nine. Yeah, he'll make that 9 out of 10 times. He cuts it into the rack to carom off that bottom ball so that it goes into the back left corner if he's shooting the left ball.
It's the same shot as the straight pool break shot, opening break shot.
Yes.
It's pretty much the same shot,
except for a little bit thicker.
You're hitting it hard enough to make it one rail back in the other corner.
And you're hitting the rack just a little bit thicker. But Corey Duell is insanely good at pocketing that ball.
A little bit and stuff. Yeah. So.
But yeah, as far as like the idea of it, it is very similar to that idea. Corey Duell is one of the he's so resourceful when it comes to finding little niches.
Yeah, especially on a back table, that shot goes easier. And on a valley, real easy because it's, you know, they're very accepting the pocket. So.
Correct. I would have liked to have seen either or even both of the players try to slow their speed down and just kind of do a pop break. Kind of similar to what they were doing at the Moscone Cup, where like about the same speed. They're only hitting it maybe 16 to 18 miles an hour and just – controlling the rock and just let the fast cloth and the diamond table carry the balls away from each other. It seems
the harder you hit it, the more chance you're going to get balls to kiss off other balls. And you're thinking, well, that's good. Why not kiss off other balls? But what happens is they stop.
Yeah, you lose a lot of velocity that way.
Yeah, the ball's kissing on the ball. They don't roll as far, so they're and on a bar table, they're close together anyways. So that's kind of what happens. You hit them so hard that you just create more collisions instead of balls falling in a pocket.
Yeah, and so a couple more tidbits on the match. Alex actually got the flu while doing this match, and
somebody said that. Yeah, I read a comment.
He got Alex sick pretty sick. Bad. And so, I mean, it would be interesting to see what happened if he wasn't sick and fully healthy. I don't know that. So I guess we still haven't given the actual score. So let me do that really quick. And I did a tiny, tiny, tiny little bit of analytics for this matchup. Nothing really crazy. But day one was won by Alex. Day one was won by John 35-30. Which means that John won 54% of the games for that day and finished +5 on the day. Day two, the final score was John 70, Alex 58, which was a total plus of 12 games for John. And on that day specifically, John won 56% of the games. On day three, John ends up winning 100-80, which is a total plus of 20 games for John. And on day three, John won 58% of his games. So in order, John won 54% of the games, 56% of the games, and then 58% of the games. And that turned into 5, 7, and 8 games total of being positive on the day. John wins every day and by very narrow margins. And I think that the narrow margins are kind of indicative to the match that was actually played, because I think I didn't count the amount of misses by each players, and one of these days I actually might have to do that, where I actually sit down and intently watch everything that happens. And maybe that's a good excuse for this weekend with Sky and Alex, and actually break down the analytics for the actual game itself and everything that's going on. Maybe I'll actually do that. That seems like a good idea. Although it means I'm not going to get anything done with my life this weekend. But
what's your winning percentage? But what's your percentage of missed shots?
Yeah. And I would track all of that, but I think the match wasn't very different as far as the amount of misses. I think they both missed somewhere close to the same amount of shots. Maybe Alex missed a few more, especially on day three. But neither one of the players missed much. It just Alex really, really, really struggled to make any balls with a shot and not scratch. I mean, I guess if you make a ball and don't scratch, you're going to have a shot in bar box 8 ball 99% of the time, especially at this level. But it just seemed like Alex could not get – I bet he wasn't successful on 50% of his breaks, and that's huge.
Ooh, that is huge. That'd be a nice stat to know. You know, okay, you lost 100-80, but you only made balls on 42% of your break shots.
Yeah.
And not only that, the other percentage you actually give your opponent ball in hand. How many of those? The 58 tables that the breaks that he does doesn't make a ball. How many of those does the opponent run? And you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. It was and you could definitely tell that the break was frustrating both players, because they both moved their break spot a lot.
Sure.
I don't know exactly how many times, again, because I didn't count, but I bet Alex moved it 7 to 8 times, and John probably moved it 3 to 5 times, somewhere in there.
Yeah. I mean,
they were moving the break spots a lot.
What kind of rack did they have in that? Did they have a magic rack?
No, they were using the plastic diamond rack, the hard plastic diamond rack. They're kind of becoming I myself have a Delta rack. But I would completely understand why a pool hall would never have a diamond or a Delta rack, because they're like $80 a piece almost just to get they're insanely expensive. So if you have a pool room with, you know, 10 or 15 tables, you're looking at $1,000 just to outfit your tables with Delta racks. I mean, that's super expensive. These kind of hard plastic ones,
And you'd have to have tags on them so that if they went through the door, that alarm would go off.
Yeah. I know that they used to use the wood diamond racks, and then those, you know, you use them for about 2 or 3 years, and they start splintering off. And I think these hard plastic diamond racks are what's going to be the racks going forward as far as pool rooms and even some of the tournaments in general, because they are a very high quality rack while being durable and moderately enough priced that, you know, if somebody walks out the door with them, it's, you know, it's not going to be a huge deal to replace them.
Yeah. Not to say anything negative about Diamond in the pool world, but there is a thing that I've noticed about the wooden Diamond racks. And that is, if the balls start to get a little bit dirty, and the cloth is maybe a little bit dirty, and the rack is getting a little older, you know, say over a year's worth of use on it, that the balls stick to the wood.
They do. They get a little sticky to it.
Yeah, some of the lacquer on the wood is wore off, and so you go to lift the rack off, and the balls all move.
Yeah.
Because they want to stay attached to the rack.
Which is another benefit of the hard plastic one that they're switching to now.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't happen. Or I haven't noticed it happening. I don't see how it would happen. And if it is, I mean, you can just go, you know, take a wet rag to it. You know,
yeah, as long as the rack doesn't warp. I mean, some of the cheaper plastic racks, they're warped. And then they won't get...
Yeah, these ones are, like, really thick ones, though. They're about an inch and a half thick, so they're...
Yeah.
They seem to be pretty high-quality racks.
Nice.
This seems to be a huge tangent to take for, you know, talking about this match, but... I guess we kind of talked about all we can talk about for this. It seemed to be a battle of the racks, and it didn't help that Alex was sick. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to do a run back of this match, maybe at Club Billiards again or somewhere else, and see what would happen if Alex is healthy. I know when I get sick, the world stops. I mean, I have the worst case of the man flu possible.
Have you ever played pool sick?
No, and that's I don't do anything well sick except for like. Die. Like, the only thing I can do well when I'm sick is die, and Alicia knows this very well. Like, when I get sick, the world stops, and I am everybody's number one priority. I turn into the biggest baby ever. I hate being sick, so I can't even imagine what it's like to play for $50,000 when you have the flu.
Yeah. $50,000, I think, right? Yeah. Plus, there were other bets in there.
Yeah, it was closer to $90,000 than it was $50,000.
But, right, that's what I heard.
As far as on the books money, it was $50,000. I mean, I don't know that being fully healthy makes up for 20 games. I think just a different table makes this an entirely different match, though. Something that breaks maybe a little bit easier, or something. It's hard to say. I know that if they played this match again, I would watch it again. There was some good pool play. There was good patterns. I feel like every time I watch a big 8-ball matchup, I always feel like I learn quite a bit about the game. So, I thoroughly enjoyed watching
when it. When you see these guys get out of racks that where there's more than two or three balls tied up in a rack, and they're getting out of it.
How creative these players are in getting into trouble, getting onto trouble balls, it's just crazy how proficient and, you know, they're firing balls into the side pocket at extremely steep angles, to the inside or to the outside of the pocket to maximize their ability to move the cue ball to get onto trouble balls. It's like the level of accuracy needed for you don't think of being, you know, you don't think of a bar table as, you know, really adhering to accurate pool. But when you see it played at this level where, you know, you're hitting the inside nipple as far out as you can so you can maximize it. And, you know, a lot of balls will like rattle and fall in. And they rattle and fall in so that the players can maximize those pockets, so they can maximize that cue action.
When you've got a 30-degree angle, 25-degree angle into that side pocket, and you have to give that ball extreme running English to break up other balls or do things like that, and then allow for that throw that you're going to have on that ball.
Yeah.
I mean, the bar table, you don't have as much deflection because the table is just smaller. So it's not like you're shooting, you know, 9 feet down the table and your deflection factor is increased by so much. So, but you do have the spin throw factor coming into effect a lot of times and quicker. It makes those pockets smaller. You have to be that good.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. So I guess, is there anything else that you'd like to say about the match?
Uh, No, it was great to followed a lot of the comments from people who were watching it and some of the things they were saying in Wisconsin here that I'm Facebook friends with. And so I got kind of like the inside story of the match from people who were actually watching it, and I didn't have to watch it. Not that that's bad, but I didn't.
Yeah, I tried to always keep Wisconsin pretty well updated on the matches on the Wisconsin Pool Player Society Facebook page. I usually try to do every three to five games. I usually try to update, and I did that well on Friday, but I did not do that on Saturday or Sunday because I was busy and I was at a pool tournament on Saturday. But whenever I can and I'm sitting down watching it intently, I like to give regular updates of it. So that's, I guess, neither here nor there. But let's move on to Sky and Alex this week. So Rob, you are another loser again on the bets. Are you going to you're going to pick your player for this week? Who are you picking?
I don't know. I owe you so much money now. I owe you for that Cue It Up podcast T-shirt that we sent to Finland. Okay. This is a tough one.
This is a really tough one. I'm almost glad that I'm not picking.
I like Alex so much as a pool so much, but Sky's on fire. Sky's comes off a great Moscone Cup. I mean, he's lighting them up. You know, I'd have to go with Sky, but I'm not. I'm going to go with Alex.
Well, I was. I'm glad that I didn't have to actually make the pick for this one. Normally, I have a pretty good idea, and it could just be because I'm a couple days away yet. But I think I'm actually 8-0. I think over the last 8 picks, I don't think I've gotten one wrong for a long time. So I feel like I just need a little bit more time to think, and something will jump out to me. But as of right now, I'm still kind of on the fence on this one. I'm happy to take Sky because I'm happy to take him. I'm happy to take either one of these players. I'm glad I didn't have to pick. As far as my actual pick on who's going to win, I would.
What's their numbers?
That's a good question. And actually, this is one thing I could have talked about before, and maybe I will, and I'll just copy and paste it back in. But even with the Fargo rates for John Mora and Alex, using the Fargo calculator, the chances of Alex winning, getting to 80, so basically in a race to 92, because 92 is the highest I could get, the chances of Alex winning, getting 12 games to 92, so Alex getting to 80 and John getting to 92 with their Fargo rating, actually John had a 80, like an almost 90% chance of winning that match still, only giving Alex 12 games based off their Fargo. So actually, even with being sick, according to their Fargo rates, Alex overperformed like crazy. Alex should have gotten, to make it a 50-50 match, Alex should have only had to go on to about 72, which is really, really weird to think about. You wouldn't think that, Alex would need that much, but 72 makes it about, or 70 actually makes it exactly 50-50 pretty much. So he needed, according to Fargo, right, he needed 22 games to 92 to be able to have a 50-50 chance of winning.
Oh.
Weird to think about that, huh?
Yeah. Well, how about these two guys, you know, Johnny Mora?
Yeah.
Woodward.
So let me pull up Fargo quick and look.
Okay. Well, you pull it up, then I'll give this tournament here, this three-question tournament here, a pro bono advertisement here. It is a Mazen Shuni run and three-question billiard tournament. I went to this one last year. It's down in Tucson, sunny Tucson, Arizona. It starts next Monday. That's the 6th or 7th. It's Wednesday, January 8th through the 11th is the added attraction of a Scotch doubles classic tournament along with a singles three cushion billiard tournament where there's really no A players in the tournament. There is kind of, but not supposed to be. That's 0.85 or higher. And they have a Scotch doubles tournament down there, too, that they still have room for a couple teams. There's some players that don't have partners that want to play. They're looking for partners. And so if you want to go to this tournament as a single and you want to play in the Scotch doubles, you'll probably be able to. They'll just, you know, hook you up with somebody to play with. And there's actually quite a bit of money involved in the partners tournament. The payout, $3,000 for first, $2,200 for second, $15 for third, $1,200 for fourth, $1,000 for fifth, $700 for sixth out of 15 teams. And it's Scotch, three-cushion billiard Scotch. It's $250 per player. So it's $500 a team to get in. And they play this in conjunction with the singles. And there's still room in the singles tournament for this, starting on the 6th. That's this coming Monday. And I think there's 51 signed up or so right now, so they're taking 64. So they got 12 or 13 openings in this tournament. And it's not handicapped, but there's supposed to be a ceiling on it. In other words, the top A players can't play. And you can pay less money to get in. So it's tiered. It's handicapped by entry fee. That if you're 0.5 or less, you pay the least to get in. It's like $150 for you. If you're between 0.5 and 0.65 or something, it's like $50 more. And then if you're 8.85 or below, it's, you know, a couple $100. So you get a little break on the entry fee if you're a weaker player. So that's always nice when tournaments do that. I kind of like that format almost more so than handicapping the tournament by Fargo or by some other points system. Just lower the entry fee and get the other players, get the all around B, C players playing with the A's and better. Just, you know, charge them less to enter. I do like that type of format. So this is going on coming up at the Casino del Sol in Tucson, not too far from the airport. A very, very nice casino. And the room they play in is extremely nice. That's a carpeted, chandelier type of a ballroom, you know, at this casino. Very, very nice. And so you get a hold of Maz and Shuni. If you want to play in this, any three-cushion players out there that have an average of 0.85, and that's pretty high average, 0.85, that's a good player. I mean, or less. So I'd probably be 0.849. That's all I got on that.
Yeah, I guess that sounds
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good tournament. And you're going to be there, right?
I haven't really made up my mind yet.
So, no.
I checked on the flights and stuff and from almost anywhere in the country for $300, you get a round-trip ticket. On most airlines.
Seems like a pretty good thing to do, Rob.
You know, it is. I had a buddy there. Mike Miller went with me from Superior last year. And, well, he drove down with his wife. But we met there, and so I had a buddy to hang around with. But I do know some of the players that are in this tournament. Yeah.
Yep. So I guess we can get back to the Sky and Alex, because I have all of that pulled up.
Okay, what do you got?
So Sky is a 795 Fargo, and Alex is an 809 Fargo. So each individual match, according to Fargo rate, Alex actually has a 63.4% chance of winning each individual match, which means Sky has about a 36.6% chance of winning. I should probably do out the math here and find out what each probability is of winning the entire thing, but I don't want to do that right now. I think Sky is probably playing a little bit better than his Fargo, and I think maybe Alex is playing a little bit below where his is. I haven't seen much of Alex play over the last, say, 4 or 5 months, so I'm not totally sure how he's playing. I have to assume, because there's a big matchup, that he's been training hard, and if that's the case, then, you know, I'm sure he's playing good, so... I have Sky, and you have Alex. That's correct?
That's correct.
I think I fall with you as of right now. I think I fall on the Sky, on the Alex side of things, very, very narrowly. But I'm just glad I wasn't the one that have to choose, because I probably would have ended up flipping a coin.
Yeah.
And so we had made the announcement before that we are going to be, or I'm going to be doing a live Facebook stream of this, interviewing these players before their big matchup the night before. So make sure that you are available to jump on Facebook Thursday night. And if you don't want to just sit there and stare at the Cue It Up Facebook page to watch this, you can always go to the settings where you follow them, and you can get alerted every time that there is a live video coming from the Cue It Up page. So that's if you want to watch this and you don't want to sit around all night trying to find out when we're going to do it, I would highly advise going over and doing that. And if you haven't followed and liked the page already, this is a really good opportunity to get over to Facebook to do that and to basically follow along for all live videos. And then you'll be alerted on your phone with Facebook notifications that the Cue It Up page is live. And at that point in time, you will know that the interview is happening, and you can chime on and give your questions. And if they're good,
what time is that going to be?
We don't know yet. So it's
okay.
It's hard to coordinate pool players, especially 4 days in advance. So probably Thursday morning to Thursday afternoon, I should get a pretty good idea. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Hard to coordinate them an hour in advance.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So I think Thursday That's morning funny. Into Thursday early afternoon, I should have a pretty good idea on when it'll be. And then I'll keep everybody posted on the Facebook page when hopefully it's going to happen. So follow along to the page. Like I said, if you're not a follower, head over to the Facebook page, like it, follow it, and then make sure you set your settings to be alerted every time that there is a live video. And if you have any problems with figuring out how to do that, absolutely reach out to the page. I'll be available all day Thursday and all day Wednesday to get you set up and help you out with that if you need it. So, yeah, I guess, Rob, what do you think? How many sets do you think this is going? It's a best 3 out of 5, race to 25 each set. So, hi, Wibby.
It's going to go to Max.
My cat just joined us. Hey, don't step on my keyboard. I'm going to have to
take go off
because you're going to be a turd.
2-2. So it's going to go 5 sets.
You think it's going to go 5 sets, huh?
Yeah, I do.
I think I probably agree with that. I feel like I have to agree with that. I just want to see this go 5 sets so bad. I want to see what each player has in their heart when it comes down to the, you know, one. And I want to see this go 20-20 in the 5th set. I want to see what each player has in their heart.
Also?
This is bar table also. I want to see what each player has in their heart when it comes down to a race to 5 for $50,000. I want to see what happens.
Yeah. But, you know, this could really be close, this whole thing. This
I think
really
so, too. I think it will be.
Last couple of games.
So, I guess you think it's going to go 5 sets. So, what do you think the final score of the 5th set will be, just for fun?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I like Alex 25-22 in the final set.
25-22. I say... I would probably agree with that, but I'm going to go with 25-18, Alex in the final set. But, I would say 25-18 in the final set goes to Alex, although I have Sky, so we're going to hope that that's not true. And, I guess with that, we can move on to the rest of the podcast. I guess, we can, do we want to have a discussion topic for the day?
That's whatever.
Well, here we'll do a short fun one since this has been brought up a couple times now. Why don't you give me who your Mount Rushmore of the greatest cueists of all? Well, we'll say pool players of all time.
Oh boy!
So who are your
four on the face?
Yep. So for anybody who's not aware of the quote unquote Mount Rushmore, the Mount Rushmore is a presidential, I guess, monument that was built into the side of a rock formation, and it's four presidents. And so the idea of the Mount Rushmore debate is the four greatest of all time at whatever they do. So this is talked about a lot when it comes to like NBA basketball, and people, you know, say Jordan and Kareem and LeBron. Now some say Kobe, Shaq, Wilt, Bill Russell,
Irving Crane.
What?
Irving Crane,
yeah,
for pool.
Course. Oh, Irving Crane, that's your number one.
Yeah.
Okay, so who are your three others?
Irving Crane would be number one. Supposedly was the best ball pocketer. So that's kind of not QS exactly, ball pocketer, but of all time. Okay, you give me one, and then I'll think of three more.
Well, when I was talking on my little podcast that I did with myself last night, I kind of gave my justification as to why I thought Alex was one of my on my Mount Rushmore. So Alex Pagulayan, I will give as one of mine.
Okay.
And if you want to know why I picked Alex, head back and listen to that episode last night. I kind of give a breakdown as to why I think he's I think he's one of the greatest of all time. So, Rob, your second one?
Willie Moscone.
Willie Moscone. That seems to be a good one. My second one will be Shane Van Boning. And I say Shane Van Boning because he kind of revolutionized the game of 10 ball. He was one of the first players that really made the break shot an art. And now you see everybody in the world who's a top 10 ball player or top rotation player in general. They really give a huge amount of focus to the break shot. And you have to if you're going to compete with players like Shane. So I pick Shane because he is a revolutionist to kind of the break shot in rotation in pool. Plus, he has six U.S. Open titles, so, I mean, that makes it easy, too.
Okay, here we go. Earl Strickland.
Earl Strickland is your number three.
Yeah.
Any justification or any reason why?
Because everybody in the world knows who he is.
There you go. All right.
That's why. And he's been a darn good pool player for a long, long, long time.
Yes,
and
he is.
Okay, he's got his little idiosyncrasies, or big, you could call them, whatever they are. And certainly there's his personality in there. But, you know, I mean, he's said it all, done it all.
So my number three will be Efren. Of course, you got to pick Efren. He's the magician. He's his story coming to the U.S., and everybody thought he was Mexican for the first couple months he was here. And at that point, he had already robbed about $100,000 worth of pool tournaments. So, he could still jump into most pool tournaments today and have a fighting chance. I mean, he's been one of the he's been probably the highest high of any pool player in my generation, as far as like just the quality of talent reached. And he just never looked like he actually took the game that seriously. He was never afraid of any shot. He never acted overly seriously at the table. He just kind of had his nonchalant sort of playing style and just ran out of everything. So my number three will be Efren.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I'm on with Efren too for the four. Now, if it was international, then I'm going Ronnie O'Sullivan and Raymond Kuhlmans for other two.
Yeah, as far as if we just opened up to Qists.
Right.
Yeah, and I don't think I know enough about snooker to really want to talk educatedly about it. I love the game, but I just don't know enough, and I kind of stay in my lane, I guess. So I'm going to limit the breadth of this to just American.
Just pocket pool.
Yeah, just pocket pool. So then my number four, and I really struggle with from here because obviously I'm a newer age player, so I don't know some of the Willie Moscones, and I've never seen them play. I don't really know much about them, so he doesn't make mine. But I have to agree with you, I think, on Earl, and I choose Earl just because he was.
Oh, you took Earl too?
Yeah, I think I have to choose Earl. I mean, he's. You can make a pretty serious argument that Earl is the greatest nine ball player still to ever walk the earth today, and I fear what might have happened if he ever figured out how to actually break the balls, because he was kind of in that era where everybody just smashed the rack and hoped for the best, and I think with Corey Dewell kind of coming along in the early 2000s, and really like perfecting the soft break and what that can do for the game of nine ball. I think that was a lot of the reason that we even have 10 ball today is because with the engineering that went into breaking a nine ball rack, a lot of which was started, you know, a little bit before Corey, but I think Corey really perfected it to the point where it was an art and an actual skill of the game. The game of nine ball just became break and run, break and run, break and run. And now we're kind of trying to revive the game, it seems like, by, you know, racking nine on the spot or breaking from the box or stuff like that, to where you're actually trying to help take the break out of the game of nine ball so that you can still actually play it. But a lot of that, you know, it's crazy how good Earl Strickland was and how talented he was, even without really putting a ton of emphasis into the break. So, Earl would make my fourth.
Well, good. We see the same thing on two players, Efren and Earl.
Yes, we do.
And what, I'm 40 years older than you are? Maybe 42, 43?
Something like that.
So, yeah, that's not so bad. We're in line. You didn't ever saw these old guys shoot. Willie Hoppe and Irving Crane and Luther Lassiter.
I have not. I will readily admit my young man bias. I will readily admit it.
Yeah. Jimmy Karras. I had dinner with Jimmy Karras one time at a tournament.
Yep. So I guess let's, do you have any tidbits for us? We're running really long. So.
Oh, tidbits here. I just got a couple here. These are quotes, from a very famous man named Mark Twain. Very famous in the literary world. Here's a few interesting quotes. You have to listen close to these because they're deep, of course, you know. This one I kind of like. It says, "Heaven goes by favor. If it went by merit, you would stay out and your dog would go in." You get that kind of? It's kind of... You know what it's saying? It's saying, yeah, people got a ways to go to be as nice as a dog.
Yes, dogs are.
Yeah,
dogs are definitely better than any human I know.
Yeah, there are two times in a man's life when he should not speculate. One is when he can't afford it, and the other is when he can. So I think Austin Hill needs to have this as his motto.
That seems like a thing.
And this one is interesting. And listen close to this one, too. It's a little complicated, but he says, never learn to do anything. If you don't learn, you'll always find someone else to do it for you.
Why did I learn how to do a podcast? Rob, you could have just did it for me.
Yeah. And this is simple. If you tell the truth, you don't have to remember anything.
That's
I like that one.
That one is particularly maybe particularly relevant to today. Maybe
you know it just you know it just might be. Yeah, this one too. He you know when you think about you've heard the expression, "I'm different from Washington." Washington could never tell a lie, right? I'm different from Washington. I have a higher, grander standard of principle. Washington could not lie. I can lie, but I just choose not to.
Well, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that we're on the evolutionary scale. We're above that now.
Now we are incorporating philosophy into our morality. Seems like an oxymoron.
Yeah, really. And this one, too, kind of, why is it that we rejoice at a birth and grieve at a funeral? And Mark Twain says, well, it's because we're not the person involved.
Fair. Yeah, fair.
And this is short and sweet. It's easier to stay out than get out. See, you could apply that to pool. Don't get in the tournament.
There you go.
Just don't go play.
Yeah. So are those all of them?
You can talk shit all you want then.
Yeah, right. Is that all of them?
No, there's more, but that's all I got for now. That's enough. That's enough to think about.
Okay, perfect. Do we have a tip?
Tips. We just gave a tip yesterday.
Should we skip the tips here then?
Well, I talked a little bit about your eyes. And how important that is. And yesterday I said something about, you know, standing back from the... That's what CTE is. You stand back from the table. And you do all this mental imagery with your eyes before you get down on the table. Then once you get down on the table and look at the shot, you either know you're right or wrong right away. You say to yourself, you lean over, get down, And you go, well, no, this ain't right. I can't make this shot. Well, then you get back up and you go, why did that happen? Well, you lean to the left or the right as you get down on your shot, and you lean the wrong way. So that is a thing again with your eyes. Now they, in the CTE, they use thirds of the ball, A, B, C, you know, they label them A, B, or C, so that you can do this figuring in your mind about, you know, where do my eyes say I got to hit, and then where do I really have to hit? So that's all. I just think go to these different places where you can get some tutoring, whether it's online or some person who will give you a lesson in this. If you're anywhere around, of course, Tyler Steyer, I mean, he'd give you, be more than willing to give anybody a CTE lesson. You know, he doesn't give it away, but you got to pay for it. Maybe catch him on a good day, you might get a deal.
This is going to be complete hypocrisy, so everybody just ignore the fact that I'm being the biggest hypocrite in general possible, because I don't do New Year's resolutions. I think they're kind of stupid. But I think they're stupid because it shouldn't take a day of the year to make you want to actually make a big change in your life. But that's just me. With that being said, today is New Year's Eve. This will be out in your feeds hopefully very soon. And use this as an opportunity to actually look forward to trying to improve one aspect of your game, whether that's banking, that's kicking, that's jumping, breaking, whatever it is. And build that into your training sessions. So if you're the kind of person that goes to the pool hall, let's say once a week, and practices for an hour, hour and a half, spend the first 15 minutes of it just working on that. Even if it's just racking up the balls and just breaking them for 15 minutes, try to stick your cue ball in the center of the table and get a good pop. Play a couple racks of bank pool. Set up some kick shots. Try to kick them in. Try to be accurate. Pick one thing in your game this year and try to just really focus on that and see what happens. See if you notice an improvement by, you know, month one, month two, month three, month seven, month 10, month 12. And, you know, that seems to be a good... I think I'm going to try and do that this year with kicking, because I'm such a terrible kicker. But yeah, that'll be my tip. So then we will close this out with me thanking one of the podcast sponsors. I will thank the Rock Sports Bar. They are the local pool hall that I play out of. And Maria and Tom Cox have both been very, very helpful with the podcast. And Tom actually does the ordering for the prints for my t-shirts. So he just ordered a bunch more so that I can make up a bunch more t-shirts. So I appreciate that, Tom, and I appreciate that, Maria. And thank you for being on board with the podcast. All right, Rob, you have angry granddaughters that want to spend time with you. So you need to go spend time with them before they rip your head off.
Okay, Nate. Well, have a happy new year, buddy. And to all the pool players out there in the world, happy new year to you too.
Absolutely.
And those of you in Australia, it's tomorrow, so you've already had your New Year's Eve. Or no, is it tonight later? 15 hours? Is that it?
I mean, I don't know, something like
so
that.
So it's midnight. When? Is it midnight there right now?
I mean, it's noon where we are, so I mean, something like that. Yeah. Seems right. All right.
Okay, Nate. See ya.
I'll echo that, and see you later, Rob.
Okay, bye. Thanks for coming to my party. Now that we're all out to grow, it's time to go home.
Hey everyone, thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Q Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.